Yes, you hear laughter in the back. Don't forget to check out Doggy Dom is No Filter. This is an actual audio podcast that can be heard on Apple Music as well as Spotify. If you don't know how to get to that or you've never been there before, the links is right below, right in the description box. So just go below and get that. Also, for only $100, I promote whatever you need on my social medias and my website. That's my Twitter, Facebook, Insta Stories, YouTube community, and my website, like I said, www.doggydiamondstv.com, which you will be featured on. Hit me up on Instagram at Doggy Diamonds for your promo. Serious inquiries only. See, I almost messed that up. Serious inquiries only. Must be Cash App ready. Let's start this. So as you hear the chords, you should already know something special about to happen. Something special happens over here at all times. But this is going to be special. Back for the second time. This ain't the first time we did this. This is the actual second time. I'm going to bring him on the screen, man. We ain't even going to do no long intro, man. We just right on the screen. We just going to chop it up real quick, right quick for y'all. Here we go. I'm Doggy Diamonds. Introduce yourself to the people.
Oh, man. I'm your brother, Mike Geronimo. What's up?
Actual facts. My brother, Mike Geronimo.
Actual factual.
So the last time you was here, unfortunately, that moment we were speaking, X passed away. So we had to cut the interview. Rest in peace to X. So we were supposed to
R.I.P.
We were supposed to do this again anyway, and then all of this stuff took place. Irv Gotti, Drink Champs. Did you see the interview?
For the most part. I watched it, like, I think I saw it in intervals. So I saw the initial part that I was mentioned, like, on one day. And then the following day, that's when I saw, like, the all out, whatever you want to call it, you know, like the next day.
What is your relationship with Irv?
It's non-existent. I mean, at this point, definitely is non-existent.
Reason why I'm asking that is because y'all did something historical together. You know, it can't be taken out of history. The first time I saw you, shit's real. Mm-hmm. Like, who is this? I heard it on the radio first. So, like I told you before, I heard Free sample. I never knew how I could catch Free. So the fact that somebody sampled and caught it, I was like, how you do that? So I'm sitting there studying. But then I heard this smooth flow come across. I'm like, Mike Geronimo. I'm like, wait, Native American or something like that? So I didn't know what to get. So when you were saying Flushing Queens, I'm like, Queens? Oh, wow. So you out on the scene. Then Video Music Box debuts this video. So I'm like, okay, this is Mike Geronimo. But in the video, I noticed it was a kid, light-skinned kid, with an afro next to you, clapping mad hard, doing that, which in turn ends up being DJ Irv. That's his name at the time, which becomes on become the infamous Irv Gotti. At what point did your relationship become sour? Because I didn't know. Like, it's a lot I want to unpack here, but what point was y'all relationship sour to you? Because was it sour to you, or just y'all just didn't work together no more?
I'm trying to accurately recall, like, because it's like a two-part question.
Okay.
In the sense of...
All right, y'all doing business. Y'all do this album.
Yeah, and I'm trying to decide, like, when in myself I started to feel like, okay, things is kind of going left. I think for me, it was probably rounding out the end of my second LP. And the reason I say that is because what he didn't bother to say was that we still had a working relationship after The Natural was released. And if you go on my second album, he produced three songs. He produced Single Life, featuring Jay-Z. He produced Usual Suspects, which is featuring The Lox, Kadafi, Rule, and DMX. and he produced a song called Life and Lesson. So it's not like he just did two songs on the first album and that was the end of the working relationship. That wasn't the case. So I think for me, I kind of knew it was coming to a head like after that second album.
So in the second album, is this the introduction to Irv Gotti? Is Irv Gotti born at this time? Or is it still DJ Irv?
No, I want to say the Irv Gotti like moniker and the persona that started to show during the lead up to, I want to say, Rule's first album. Like from maybe the midpoint of them putting like maybe the final touches on it to like that album coming out. And then like after that, it was just, that's who he was. That's what we started to call him.
So what's the difference between DJ Irv and Irv Gotti? Is it different people?
To an extent, I would say, because I think DJ Irv kind of had limitations on how he could act and where that made sense. And I think Irv Gotti, you know, there were no limitations and there were no regrets and there were no apologies. You know, I think that's about right.
So, all right, you have a song called Time to Build where we hear DMX, Jay-Z, which I knew, I'm from Brooklyn, so I know who he was, and this kid named Ja Rule, who I really didn't know. I kind of seen a little bit of some thing called a Cash Money clip, but I wasn't interested really. But I knew who you were. That record comes about. Did you put that record together, or is that a Irv Gotti move?
No, that entire thing was all him. That was all him. Like I was familiar with who Jay-Z was because I remember him doing, you know, the Originators with Jazzo. And I think at that time, a group known as Original Flavor had just had a song out called Can I Get Open?
Yep.
Which I actually kind of dug, you know, but so I knew who he was, or at least I was familiar with who he was. X, I totally didn't know. And Rule, I met through Irv. So this was all his play. He played me the track, and I remember being excited here in the joint because it was one of the joints that he gave me that I was like, okay, yeah, this I could fuck with. Like, I like this beat. So I was excited just hearing the beat and hearing the Rakim sample that it's Time to Build. You know, so for me, that was enough. And then once he said that Rule, X, and Hov was going to be on it, I was like, all right, cool. I just wanted to hear what they sounded like. You know, like, I knew what Rule sounded like because I'd been around him. Like, I heard him spit. I knew what it was. I knew how Hov sounded, but bear in mind, his style was different. It had changed from his delivery on the Can I Get Open record because he used to rhyme very fast. And that wasn't the delivery that he put on Time to Build. And then X, I didn't ever have the chance prior to that to hear him. But the way that he was talking about X, I was like very anxious to hear what he said. So he mapped it out.
So this record comes about, and this, I won't say launch their careers, but this is the birth of what we thought was going to be Murder, Inc. This is the birth of that. This is because Jay-Z, Ja Rule, and DMX were supposed to be a group called Murder, Inc. So this is the birth of that.
Correct.
And this is all Irv's brainchild.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Did you pay any of them for a feature? Did any of them charge you?
At that time, no.
Okay. Okay.
At that time, no. They got on. It was just people being hungry trying to get on at that time. And I was just the one out of all of us who was in position to bring the rest of us to the forefront.
Because I always wanted to ask you, your deal with TVT, did he get you that deal?
I mean, all the deals that were being offered to me, yeah, you pretty much could say that because he was the one the labels were calling.
Got you.
And I didn't even know how all of that was coming about. I just know that he would tell me, like, these people was interested and these people were interested. And then he would just tell me the days that we would have to go up to the labels and talk with the people and meet them and see how we felt about it. So everything was coming through him. So, it's accurate to say he's the one that, you know, initiated that whole sequence of events.
So if I'm trying to understand his gripe, is his gripe that prior to you signing, he was going to do your album? Did you ever have a discussion that you are my producer?
I'm trying to remember if we ever did, and I can't recall us ever having a discussion where we was like, okay, you're going to be my producer and I'm going to be your MC and that's that. As a matter of fact, I would actually say no, we didn't. And the reason being is because I was automatically thinking of, aside from Irv, who I wanted to work with. Mm-hmm. And I was under the impression that he wasn't going to restrict me from working with anybody. But bear in mind, I didn't sign an agreement with him. Up to that point, like when we were just moving, no, there was no agreement signed between us. All the friction started when he presented me with signing to his production company, which at the time was known as Top Dog. But Top Dog was actually the genesis for what would become the production side of Murder, Inc.
So he wanted you to sign to him a production deal, which means that you wouldn't have had a deal with TVT. It would have been his deal.
Exactly.
So I want to school the audience because they don't know what production deals are. Production deals are the producers sign the deal. It is their deal, and they can do and put what artists they see fit under what they want to do. So if you had a sign to Top Dog, Irv Gotti would have been signed as a producer to TVT, and then they could have put you out if they so chose to, or they didn't have to either.
Exactly. Yeah. So had it been that way, any revenue needed to make and complete the project would have directly went to him. Mm-hmm. And as you said, I wouldn't be under TVT. I wouldn't have a deal with a label. I would have a deal via the production company, which has a deal with the label. So I would have been distributed by TVT, but ultimately it would have been distributed by TVT under Top Dog.
Mm-hmm. So before you signed the TVT, he offered you a production deal?
It was very, very, I think what it was in hindsight, and my memory may not be 1,000% accurate. I want to say it's more than likely that it's closer to being accurate than as opposed to not. But I think in hindsight, looking back now, I think everything moved super fast. Mm-hmm. And I think that we were presented with offers from three different labels. We sat with TVT and that felt good, that meeting. And then I think the dilemma was, because he didn't present the production to me sooner, he kind of tried to rush me into it because he knew that it was a matter of days before we closed with TVT. So he kind of...
So you already got an offer. You got an offer from TVT.
Absolutely.
So he tried to say, don't take that offer. Take this deal with me.
What he did was we went to TVT. We sat with Steve Gottlieb. We had a good meeting. He explained to me it would be best for us to go there because they were an independent label with money. and I would be the first artist on an independent label. Now, mind you, he's explaining the pros to signing with the label, but he's also saying, I need you to sign this production deal. So it's really no reason for you to explain to me what I would be under the label, because I wouldn't technically be signed to them. Mm. But he was explaining that out of all these houses, this was the best opportunity. So I think that because TVT was itching to go, and I think that because the timing was everything, he kind of tried to ram the production agreement in my face at the time. And you got to bear in mind, I'm like 18, 19, bro. I don't know music, bro. Like, all I know is for myself. All I know is I like rhyming and I like recording. And okay, you say we on a certain, maybe we are, you know, so this gets explained to me through my management, the whole breakdown of me signing to a label as opposed to me signing to a production company and vice versa. They tell me, okay, if you do this, then you can sign with him, but that label would never, they're not going to give you a dime. Like, they're anything that they're going to allocate, they're going to send to Top Dog. And then, as it was explained to me, they could give him $100,000 and he can turn around and decide to only give you $2,000.
Yeah.
Or
$5,000. Mm-hmm. That's how it works. Right. Or nothing. And or nothing. Or $500. Or $100.
Or five. Or it could be any figure that he decided. And I remember my parents, it was explained to them at the time. And I remember my dad, you know, coming back to me and having a talk with me. And he's like, you know, if you're smart, you don't sign to this deal, this production thing, because you may never get what you're entitled to get. Mm. And but again, I'm a kid. I don't know any better. Like, and on top of that, our scenario is moving at 1,000 miles per hour. I mean, like, it went from 0 to 100 real quick.
And Shit's Real is on the radio at this time, right?
Yeah, like, it's on the radio. He shot the video. He got Hype Williams to come out and shoot the video on this little itty bitty camera. And so now everything's accelerated. So that was explained to me. And then, it's pretty much what I said on Drink Champs. So I actually was weighing all of this out because I was like, I had realized what he had did for me. You know, he was in front of radio stations at 5 in the morning, like waiting for every DJ. You know, we would go to any club in New York and he'd be like, yo, Mike, go give DJ such and such the record. Go. You know, we have Freaknik, I see Tupac, and he's like, yo, go get Pac your sticker and your CD and just go talk with him. Better. So, it was, you know, we was working. We was old school moving things.
And so did you feel a loyalty that you had to sign to him, but then at the same token that if I sign to him, I really might be signing my career away? Was that your situation as far as like, you're not gonna.
I think what
the pro is signing to my man. The con is, this is still business.
I think with me, no, I can honestly say I never looked at it like, well, this is VIA. Mm. Like that just wasn't me as a person. Mm. You know, like I said, all of this shit was moving at like 1,000,000 miles per hour, and I'm still digesting the fact like that it's all taking off. You understand what I'm saying, bro? Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, okay, so maybe I am good at this, or maybe this will turn into something. I think for me, the dilemma was more, do I listen to the advice I'm being given from the people that love me the most in the world versus being loyal to him? Hmm. You know, because like I said, I do remember all the things that he did. I did take into consideration that, yeah, I didn't press this song up, he did. I didn't shoot this video, he did. But it was a very difficult thing. And he kind of like, I want to say, was trying to pressure me initially to maybe go a certain way. But that wasn't any good because that just resulted in friction between my management, who was actually my cousin, and that side of my squad and him.
So let's fast forward. You did, history shows you didn't sign to him.
No, and the reason I didn't is because we were sitting, we came to my crib and my stepmother had made us, some food to eat, and we sat at the table and we ate. And we went down to his car, and she said something to the extent of, yo, why you letting George and them get between us, me and my management? And he's like, yo, I thought this was me and you. Why you letting everybody tear us apart? The psychological bullshit that you would say to try to maneuver somebody to be, in your corner and do what you want. I mean, I can say that now because I'm older and I could assess it better because now I've been through all of this shit. And I remember saying to myself, unbeknownst to him, I was like, I know what I was advised to do, but I kind of think I'm going to go against all of that anyway and sign this agreement with him. So I told him, but I just wanted to give myself a little more time to be sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to be okay with knowing that, all right, if I do opt to sign this production deal, that does mean what it does, and hopefully I don't get fucked in the end.
Mm-hmm.
But I was willing to do that, and it was up until he had turned to me in the car and told me, see, and mind you, all I asked him for was maybe a day or two more to wrap my head around it.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, see, I knew I should have just made you sign it like niggas told me to. And when he said that, that was the first sign that I was like, well, first off, if you were saying that we team and we family and all this shit, you would never tell me anything like you should have made me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was kind of shocked when he said that to me. And then he said, yeah, when he said it, I was kind of like, I kind of felt like he was like you a sucking nigga. I can make you do what I want.
Mm.
And sometimes I ask myself, youthful impetuousness, were you too sensitive about that? But then I'm like, no, it was the way that it was said. Like, I should have just made you. And in my head, I was like, you're not making me do shit.
Mm.
Number one, but just for you to say you should have made me is a red flag in itself. So as it went, after he had said that, I got incredibly turned off about the possibility of signing to the production deal. And I didn't do that. I opted to sign with TBT.
So you signed with TBT. Does he get compensated financially anyway in any of this?
I believe so. I definitely think he did. And not only that, he actually ended up being an A&R at TBT.
We got hired.
Right. He got hired as an A&R. And I was the first project because initially there was a guy named Will Fulton that had brought us into TBT. He was the A&R, I guess that you could say we were signed under. I was signed under.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing I knew, Irv was like the A&R.
Mm.
And I think that was also the beginning of me seeing that TVT kind of was still trying to figure out their staffing, their infrastructure, how the game is played in terms of rap music, because they had never dove into this genre before. And I was the first experience they had with it. So I was the guinea pig all the way around.
If I'm not mistaken, you was on Blunt.
TVT Blunt. Correct.
but Blunt was the was the urban label, as they used to say, the urban labels. Yeah.
The urban division of TV. Right.
Yeah.
You know, they had people like Nine Inch Nails. Mm-hmm. They had Seven Dust.
A lot of rights to TV stuff at that particular time. Yeah.
Yeah. They owned like every television track that was ever made to man, from the Jetsons to the Jeffersons to All in the Family. So, but this was still their first endeavor in the world of rap.
So he does two tracks on your first album. As you reply, you saw him make beats? Like, was he making the beats himself at that time?
Yeah, I definitely seen him on the MP, you know, and I seen him, you know, like, but that would be in the studio. Mm-hmm. And I could remember vaguely, like, him having headphones on, and I guess, you know, the things producers do, they may try to adjust a kick or a snare, whatever it is.
And, mm-hmm.
But it was just mad annoying to me. Like, the most annoying part of the beats would always be his drums to me. Because I just wasn't used to drums being that restrictive. Like, I always remember I would go home, and like my brother and my cousins, they would hear the beats with me. And, you know, like, they would not be as kind as I would be with trying to, you know, like.
Let's say what you said. You said you didn't pick the beats because the beats was fucking whack.
Exactly, bro. So my brother and my cousin, them niggas would be like, yo, this shit is garbage, bro. Like, what are you going to do to that? And I would always be like, yo, why do all his drums remind me of like a wooden soldier marching like this? Like, everything was. And if you listen to Shit's Real, you'll hear that hard, like, snare that kind of, like, it wasn't what I was used to. And I say that as to say, like, I grew up with Large Professor. I would be at his crib every day.
He on an SP, so that swing is retarded. What? So, okay, I know what your issue was. You used to, you know, certain drums have a swing that makes your cadence change when you rap.
Exactly.
So you, exactly. It might have been too monotonous for you and too stiff. The quantizing.
It's crazy you say that so accurately. Like, this proves that you definitely be in your... I was going to say, this proves that you be in your bag, because I'm going to tell you why. It's not just that. People don't understand. When you're an artist, you pick certain parts of the beat to ride on.
Mm-hmm.
And certain parts of a beat are going to tell you what your cadence should be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Certain parts of a beat are going to tell you when to stop.
When the stanza, that's the stanza, when the end of the stanza. Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Certain parts of the beat are going to tell you, all right here, you should kind of play with your flow. Right here, you could go back to the main ingredient. So I was used to beats that have more of a swing to them, or that have more of a, you know,
a bounce to them. Yeah.
Right. So when I get with him and I'm hearing, psh, 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 it kind of made me struggle as an artist to, because it wasn't just me saying, all right, I got to get comfortable with the idea you're telling me to write.
Oh, so he was trying to give you the song ideas and everything?
Yeah.
So he was trying to produce you.
And
he was trying to produce you.
Exactly. Right. And I think where the clash came is, I think he assumed that he'd be able to, I don't want to say dictate, because that may be too strong of a word, but I think he just thought that, all right, I have a drone and I can guide this drone. And I could tell this drone to go left, and I could tell this drone to go right. And sometimes that worked. Like, in the case of Shit's Real, like, that hook was spontaneous. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I was freestyling on the beat, and I said something like, Shit's Real, now you know the deal, it gets realer. I can't remember the words. And he stopped me, and he was like, yo, what you just said? And I was like, I don't even know what I just said. I'm just rhyming. Mm-hmm. You understand? Because I would just black out, bro, and spit. And he rewound it. I think it was the ADAT shit or whatever at the time. And he rewound it. And he was like, nah, you said shit's real. Now you know the deal, it gets realer. And he was like, yo, Mike, I want you to say shit's real. Now you know the deal, it gets realer. Oh, shit's real. Yeah, I know shit's real. Oh, shit's real. Yeah, I know shit's real. And I was like, and he's like, yo, just trust me. Trust me. And that from that experience, and so I did. And that became the hook. From that experience, I was like, yo, it made me say to myself, okay, you can listen to what he's telling you to do. Because he does know what he's doing.
Great coach.
On that note, right, on that note. So I can never say that he doesn't know what he's doing. I just think that it was hard for me to adjust to his sound.
So you did, but you did pick Time to Build. You did that. You did Shit's Real. Did he think he was your producer?
I don't know if that was what it was. I mean, he may have decided that on his own, but I definitely know I was always like, yo, because I be at law. I'm with the nigga Lars to give me this. I was like, yo, Lars knows Q-Tip. So, you know, and I met Q-Tip through him at his crib. So I was constantly talking about the producers that I knew I wanted to deal with. Or that I met being at Large Crib.
Did he ever give you any resentment at that time? Because on Drink Champs, his resentment was he only did two on that shit on your first album. And then he called you something that we just don't call other men. So I'm just trying to figure out. He seemed like he was angry because he only did two songs. When did you become a bitch ass nigga? That's what I'm just trying to, I'm confused.
Nigga, he decided to make that bullshit up. Like, that is something different because that's like, nigga, that's G-code shit. You know, so that don't even have nothing to do with production or not. That's what you decide to define me as because you pissed off. What I will say is early on, I noticed that he would say things about other producers in a negative light. Like, kind of like he had a chip on his shoulder.
Like about laws?
Like if I... Yeah, like if I was mentioning Large or if I was like, I mean, he told me that I think they went on tour or some shit like that. I think he was DJing for Jay-Z or some shit like that. And that's how he had got cool with The Rock. If I'm not mistaken, I think that's what he had told me was the genesis of them meeting.
Got you.
So he knew Large, but if I brought up other producers, he would kind of get like, I don't want to say offended, but you could tell. He kind of would be like, well, I'm more concerned about what we doing.
Got you.
And the problem was he would give me beats and I would be like, nah, I can't fuck with this shit. I think the only other beat that he gave me that I dug, but it just wasn't
He told me this off the record. Tell him what it was.
Yeah, he gave me a beat. He gave me the beat that Hov used for You're Only a Customer. And that actually was one of the first songs on the demo. We did a song called Niggas. I remember the hook was for my niggas. And that's all it was. And to me, after I did it, I was like, this is a very boring record. It's not me highlighting myself. Like, I could tell that I'm struggling to rhyme on this song. So I kind of knew the beat wasn't meant for me. And to be honest with people, like, every beat you get is not meant for you.
Well, it ended up being a Jay-Z record that we all know. Okay, you do the first album. He's on the album. Obviously, you do a second album. It's the second album with TBT.
Yeah.
Okay, so they clear a budget.
And to cap it off now. Now, here's where things change, because a lot of things change between The Natural and Vendetta. BJ, who's Irv's right-hand man, became my manager. during that time. And, you know, Big Homie and them, you know, they came home during that time. He came home during that time. And during that time, you know, Irv is asserting himself at Def Jam. So in between the first and second album was the genesis of his Def Jam year. And it was the change from DJ Irv to Irv Gotti.
That's why I asked you that.
Right. So this was all taking place in between the first and second album. And then I think the idea became, okay, Mike is here. Wool is here. X and Hov in the cut. And I'm going to get them landed. But I still was never privy to knowing the entire plan. And now I think that was another source of friction because he just wasn't telling me much. And I think the first time that I truly felt kind of insulted by him, I never forget, we was in TVT one day, and I forget what the argument was about between him and the label. It was something regarding direction that wanted to be taken with. And he was still an A&R at TVT, but he was also working at Def Jam. But he started kind of neglecting what was going on with TVT, but he kind of had to keep putting energy into it because, like I said, BJ's my manager, and he's tied in the Big Homie.
When you say Big Homie, you can't reveal who it is because I don't think they know who Big Homie is. I know who you're talking about, but let them know.
I know who you know.
Yeah, okay.
But see, this I'm pointing out is the difference. Like, I don't use Holmes as a you feel me?
Reason why I'm saying that, Mike, because I thought that would have been that Big Homie is also his Big Homie. So I thought that would have kept everything together. So I didn't understand if y'all got the same Big Homie. So go ahead. Because it's a conflict to me.
Right. And it kind of, it's very complicated, doggy, because like I said, BJ was Big Homie's, like his right hand. And me and BJ just ended up clicking. Like we met in a tunnel and we was cool. And at the time I met BJ, I definitely needed new management. Like that was a problem internally with myself. Like I just never had good management. But still, I'm a kid. I don't know this shit.
How old are you at this time? You're 21 now, maybe?
Yeah, at the most, I was 21, bro. Gotcha. Like, at the most, I was 21.
Did you hit MTV yet? Because we have to point out to the world, you was the first one with a reality TV show as we know it. It was the real world.
You know what?
Go ahead.
Right. Because BJ came with me to the Bahamas when MTV was filming a reality series. It's a lot of footage that they didn't show, but MTV was with me for like a month, bro. So like them niggas caught me getting locked up. The niggas caught me doing shows in the Bahamas.
Smoking reefer.
But BJ was there with me the whole time. By that, at that point, BJ was my management.
Irv is your A&R.
And I think Irv is TVT the A&R. TVT is the label. Ja Rule is getting ready to take off on Def Jam.
When did he leave TVT, though? Because it was a point where Ja Rule was there, too. With the Cash Money clip.
Now, I try to remember exactly when, because there was a very big legal issue between Def Jam and TVT regarding Ja. And I don't exactly know what the ins and outs of it was, but I do know that it was complicating whatever moves Irv wanted to make regarding Rule or the Click. It may have, I want to say, and I'm not going to say I'm 1,000% correct about it, but I believe that Irv was trying to get the whole Cash Money Click off of TBT. and I think there was some sort of an issue. And then
did it fuck with Yoshi?
Rule ended. Did it fuck with Masha?
Yeah.
Nah.
I'm asking that because Irv is in charge of what you're doing, but he's also in charge of
right,
what they're doing.
But what I mean by that is like I was kind of the golden child at TVT.
Gotcha.
So they never would make things difficult for me, and they never would allow things to be difficult for me. But I mean, realistically speaking, you can't do that if I'm the lead horse out of the stable.
Gotcha.
I have to be healthy and able to run because I'm the first horse you let out the stable. So they wouldn't never let anything really fuck with my thing or what I was doing. But still, if we're all intertwined, meaning if BJ's my manager and he's my A&R, it's kind of like by default. If you're having problems here, that shit is going to have some sort of a ripple effect.
So at what point does he leave you and just go? Because you dropped the second album. How many joints he got on the second album?
He had three.
So at this point, is it still him or he got other dudes coming and he's Dr. Dre and shit now?
No, I believe at that point he had, I think he had the first crack house. One that we had out in I want to say it was Long Island.
So when you say you was a part of the original crack house.
Yeah, I was there.
See, Mike, this is what I want the world to know.
I see where
it's a part of the history that you're erased from. You know that, right?
Absolutely.
It's a great part of the beginning of what they did. They went on to do great things, but there's a beginning that's chopped, and then it looks like it started with Ja Rule.
Right, and it didn't.
Yeah, and
but that's him remixing history's events. Because the minute that he saw fit for me to not be a part of things, bro, you gotta understand, like, nigga, even when Rule was doing Pain Is Love, mm-hmm. even when Rule did, I can't remember if 336 came out first, or I think Vinny Vedovici was the first.
Mm-hmm.
And I think 336 was the second one.
Mm-hmm.
I was right there still for all of this.
Wow.
Yeah.
You serious?
I was right there.
So why you wasn't ever was you on none of the albums?
Because I think he enjoyed, first of all, Big Homie loved me to death mm-hmm. to this day. And it gets more complicated because as fate would have it, my cousin Rev, who actually became a producer with Murder Inc., his production name is That Nigga Rev.
Mm.
My cousin Rev from Southside is blood related to Prince.
Mm.
So
They're gonna put together who Big Homie is. You said Prince. They're gonna put it together.
Now they're gonna put it together. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I was only saying that earlier because I don't use that shit
for clout. Yeah, for clout. Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? So my cousin, 6 degrees of separation, we're actually blood related in that sense. My cousin is related to my aunt's. Like somebody's cousin or whatever named Fergie, which I never, like, it's vague to me. I have to go back and ask my cousin, like, yo, who's Ani BG and related to blah, blah, blah. But anyway, it turns out that we blood related.
Mm.
And Red ends up becoming a producer in Murder Inc. State. So even if there's friction between me and Irv, because I introduced my cousin to Irv and him, and Irv ends up telling him to become a producer for them, I'm still coming up the crack house because nigga Reb fucks with you.
Are you getting time there? Are you recording there?
Nah, I'm not recording there at all.
Because I want to ask a direct question. There's a time where you're not on TBT anymore, right?
Yeah.
What I never understood about your career was, why did your career just halt the way it did? Was it something you did, or what? Honestly, were you blackballed?
Yeah.
Were you blackballed?
It was. I think it was both.
Okay.
Now in hindsight and after me learning more, because you got to understand a lot of this shit, I learned more after I did Drink Champ.
Mm.
I may have heard whispers of, yo, we think this one did this or that one did that, but I couldn't really confirm it because there was no evidence for me to be able to point to and be like, oh yeah, so there's something to it. I might have gut feelings, but long story short, once he decided he wasn't fucking with me, yet I would still come around because I'm still tied into BJ. Big Homie has his love for me. My cousin's one of your producers. And me and Roll is still cool. Me and Black Child still cool. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. the original hitters, I didn't let none of this shit affect my relationship with them. And I had a different relationship with them as opposed to him. And the truth be told, he actually enjoyed when I would come around so that he could rub it in my fucking face.
Mm.
But I never wouldn't let it bother.
Never offered you a situation again?
Hell fucking no. Hell no.
All right, so you got Jay-Z on your first album. You got DMX. Mm-hmm. You got Ja Rule. Why wasn't that shit reciprocated for you?
You have to ask them niggas. The only one that I know reciprocated it. I mean, Rule kind of did because I ended up doing an independent project with that same cousin who was a producer of Murder, Inc.
Mm-hmm.
And our other man, Case. Mm-hmm. Me, Case, and Reb opted to start our own shit called Rebellious. If mm-hmm. you go online and you look up Long Road Back, we put that album out.
Mm-hmm.
So because we was doing independent shit or striving to, the nigga Herb actually set us up with a meeting with somebody, if I'm not mistaken, named Andrew Schack,
mm-hmm.
who worked at, I want to say, Priority.
Mm-hmm.
I might be wrong. And this was to land an independent deal. Now, mind you, Chris Gotti had a lot of love for me, Case, and Reb and what we was doing because we wasn't moving like the rest of the niggas.
Solid dude. Shout out to Chris Gotti. Solid
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, facts. I'm always have love for Chris.
Shout out to
but
Chris.
I think he saw in us three, like, yo, they got brains on their shoulders. They not just sitting here waiting for a gravy train. They actually want to strike out on their own. And they have a good possibility of doing it because Mike is already asserted as an artist. So we doing the independent thing and it never made sense to me because this nigga would kind of like be like, all right, I'm going to set y'all up with Shaq and da 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 da. I don't think it was because of me because I think he had his resentment for me at that point.
Did y'all ever have an argument?
It's the wildest part.
Because I want to know at what point did you become, did you know he looked at you like a bitch ass nigga? Like, did y'all ever say
never,
that? That's what I'm saying.
And here, never. And the wild shit, because I remember going to the Ink when the Ink was in the Def Jam building.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget what it was in particular, but I think them streets was talking and telling me like this nigga was saying some sideways shit about me or some wild shit about me or whatever. And I think it was somebody who was at a party and they said they was talking to the nigga about and the nigga said some foul shit. So when I found out, I went up to the Ink on my own,
mm-hmm.
by myself. And I went in his office and I was like, yo, what's up? I heard, you know, we not good. What's the word? Nah, we good. You sure? Because this is not what I hear outside. Nah, my G, we good. We good, my G. You sure? Yeah. So I don't know what kind of fucking game he was playing at that point, but for me, that's when I said to myself, all right, don't make the mistake in calling this nigga your friend.
Mm.
He's not. And the person that really tried to hold the dam from breaking was Big Homie.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had and has a lot of love for me.
Mm.
And I never forget, and you got to bear in mind too, a lot of the dudes that I got turned on to, the older dudes, them niggas came to have genuine love for me.
Mm.
So there might have been niggas that we got turned on to you know, through the network, but they talking to me now on some regular cool shit. Mm-hmm. And then we developing our own relationships to the point where, like, I could go to Miami and I'm good. Mm-hmm. Like, I was running around in Dade and Broward County and in the bottom and Opa-locka and all of that shit before any of these most New York niggas knew what all of that shit was. Mm. You understand what I'm saying? I knew Trick Daddy. I knew Touche. I knew because of people we was linked to. Mm-hmm. But these people came through. You know what I'm talking. They mm-hmm. came through. You know,
big homie. Yeah. Let me ask you a serious question. Yeah. Did you mm-hmm. This shit gonna sound crazy, but I gotta ask. Did you fuck one of these girls or a girl he liked?
Never. And
because you know dudes be because you realize this shit between you and him is like a long time ago. It wasn't even 20 years ago. It's longer than 20 years ago.
This shit is longer than 20 years ago, bro. So to me, it's weirdo shit because I'm like, and I don't really want to talk that way because I've said to myself, like, in the last 2 days, I did a lot of hard for thinking, you feel me? And I said to myself, I really don't want to give this man any more attention. Mm. You know, I really don't. Like, nigga, I don't give a fuck what you do. I hate to put it that way and sound it that way. And I don't want the public to be like, oh, you sound bitter. But it's just the truth. He crossed a certain line that changes the dynamic completely. So now I'm like, I don't even want to hear your name. And I damn sure don't want to hear my name associated with yours. But we'll never be able to prevent that because we made history together.
What is the mutual friend saying, though? Because y'all do got a lot of mutual people. What are they saying?
Yeah, we do. We do. It's a touchy situation right now, brother. Mm. That's the best way I could describe it to you. It's a lot of people that... So you got to understand, some niggas, them niggas left behind once they got hot. And I didn't leave no one behind. I didn't turn my back on none of the niggas we knew outside of the music shit. Mm. Because these ended up being people that became family to me. Mm. So it's a lot of niggas that them niggas, you know, we up here, fuck y'all. And I didn't do that. I could still go, you know, to them spots where niggas shot get the fortune or you know, I could still run back home and chill out on a Saturday with everybody and then go to my neck of the woods. You feel me?
Reason I'm asking you this, it was because we have to qualify you. At one point, you was top three, top five artists in New York City. Your name was on. You was like your videos playing. You're all over the radio, daytime radio. I remember your shit. I'm like, you understand what I'm saying? But I never got ego out of you. I never got asshole. I never got this.
No, these are things, honestly.
I never got that from you. Even upon meeting you years ago, never been on some funny style shit. So I didn't understand.
That was never my way.
I'm trying to figure out what the smoke for you is.
I think he just went, bottom line, like when I try to, because I'm not going to say I didn't sit there and be like, okay, the fuck is the problem? Mm-hmm. Especially if I go up to the Ink and I ask you, and you tell me we good. So now I'm really like, okay, so what is the nature of all of this bullshit, these bullshit games? You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And all I could come up with is the nigga felt, I guess, if I step outside of myself to look at it, can I understand how you might have felt that I didn't believe in you because I didn't like your beat? I could understand how you could deduce that, but that doesn't mean it's the truth. I never said I don't believe in you. I don't like the fucking beats you make, bro. You feel me? So with that being said, hang on, dog, because my battery is like
seconds
from dying.
We going to rap. We going to rap because I think we got everything we need to get. I do want to end on this note. When is this album coming? I heard some stuff.
Oh, it'll come out.
I heard some stuff. Yeah. I heard some stuff in person. When is this album coming?
Yeah, it's coming out this year. You're probably going to get the whole project, like I would say, definitely before Christmas time.
Before Christmas time. All right, so Mike, question. I just wanted you to, you know, give you the opportunity, because a lot of platforms is not going to give you the opportunity. Some will, but some people want to sensationalize the story now, because everybody's going to be calling you now. You know that, right? So you might as well sell this.
Nigga, my phone berserk for the last
Just plug.
You, my nigga.
Yeah, plug the project and plug the Instagram. You know what I'm saying?
I'm on Instagram, y'all. I'm at Mike Geronimo, I think, on TikTok, and Twitter is at Real Mike Geronimo. On Facebook, it's the fan page, Mike Geronimo. And you could always go to my website, www.MikeGeronimoMusic.com. The album is 3016. Shout out to Symphonics. Dog, Aki, you know.
Yeah, I heard what I heard. That's all I'm going to say. I heard what I heard. So, before we go, can this shit with you and him be dead or squashed?
Never. I don't want to see him. I don't want to think about him. I don't want to acknowledge him. I don't want to peace pipe shit.
Is this some 5 minute shit? Or y'all got to shoot the five, or you just saying fuck, y'all just going to stay away from me? Like, where does it go?
I mean, there's a side of me that says both. But I think I've grown up a great deal, bro. And it's not easy to be a good dude, bro. Because it's so easy for you in 1 minute, 1 second to make a decision that
change the rest of your life.
It could change the rest of your life. It could change the rest of your day. So it's very, very hard to stay on a path, especially when you're trying to be positive. But I don't want nothing to do with murdering. I don't want nothing to do with their history. I don't want nothing to do with him. I don't want nothing to do with Ja Rule. I don't want nothing to do with anything that came.
What the fuck Ja do, though? Why you say Ja? What would Ja do?
I mean, I'm not mad at Rule. You know what? I can't say I don't want nothing to do with Ja Rule in the sense of a person, as a friend, as Jeffrey Atkins as a friend. He's always going to be my man. You know, but I understand all of this shit. And he's too linked in and tied in with Son. And when it gets to the point of you not being able to be sure that somebody's not, you know, maybe fucking with both sides of the fence. And when you're not really sure if they're truly, you know, still... You know, and I'm not saying you got to pick a side, but I am saying if it becomes hard for me to read what you really think about me, I just would rather not deal with you. I don't got problems with you. I just don't want to deal with you. And I don't mean that in a, like, fuck that nigga type way. I just mean it like, bro, I understand. I'm going to always love you. I'm going to always love what we did. I'm going to always want you to win. And I'm going to always want you to continue to have success. But that's too close to... fucking with him.
All right.
And I don't want nothing to do with it. You know, so.
That's it, man. Mike, I'll call you later on. Thank you for joining me today. Until next time.
I love you, bro.
Love you too, bro. We out. Peace.
One.